Has you ever looked at a photograph, listened to a song, or read a book and felt a certain way, but couldn't quite put your finger on how it achieved that effect? What are the subtle, invisible mechanisms, shaping your perception and understanding? Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we cut through the noise to get to the core of big ideas. Today, we're taking a deep dive into a groundbreaking collection of essays by one of the 20th century's most influential thinkers, Roland Barthes' Image Music Text.
It's really profound exploration of how meaning is created and communicated across, well, all sorts of media, from a simple ad to complex literature, even the human voice itself. Our mission today really is to equip you with a powerful new toolkit, turning you into a master decoder of the cultural world all around you. And this isn't just about understanding art or media, it's about fundamentally understanding life, I think, in a much more nuanced way.
That's a fantastic overview. So let's zoom in a bit. Before we dive into the specific essays, tell us, who exactly was Roland Barthes and what made him, uniquely qualified to guide us through these pretty powerful ideas?
Okay, so Barthes, who lived from 1915 to 1980, was a French literary theorist, a semiotician, and he utterly revolutionized cultural analysis. He started his academic journey, deep in classical literature and philosophy, but then he did something quite unique. He bridged into these emerging fields like semiotics, that's the study of signs and symbols and structuralism, which broadly looks at how underlying systems give meaning to things. And he had this rare, almost uncanny gift for applying really rigorous theory to everyday stuff. Things like wrestling matches, magazine covers. You see it vividly in his earlier work, Mythologies, which was hugely popular.
Right. So he could see the profound. And what seems mundane, was that controversial back then?
Yeah.
Applying that kind of academic lens to pop culture?
Oh, absolutely. At a time when literary theory often stayed focused solely on high art, Barthes really challenged those established hierarchies. He was essentially saying, look, a wrestling match or a detergent ad can tell us just as much about our culture as a classic novel. He taught at the École Pratique des Hautes Études in Paris, and his perspective was really distinctive because he wasn't just analyzing abstract systems from afar, he was exploring the experience of encountering them, combining, systematic analysis with a deeply personal, almost, well, sensual sensibility. He wanted to figure out how things signify and why we feel what we feel when we encounter them.
That's fascinating. So, okay, what's the central thread, the big idea, the sort of paradigm shift that ties image, music, text together for Barthes? What's the core revelation he's offering you as a listener?
The main idea, really the absolute core of image, music, text, is that meaning isn't inherent. It's not prepackaged or just sitting there waiting to be found inside cultural objects. Instead, it's actively constructed. It's not something the creator simply puts there for you to discover, like digging up buried treasure. No, meaning emerges through this dynamic, often complex interaction between signs, cultural codes, specific contexts, and crucially, you, the reader or viewer, encountering these things.
Okay, now this next point feels like a really significant turn in his thinking. He argues for this radical shift, moving away from the creator towards the receiver. How truly revolutionary was that idea when he first put it out there?
Oh, incredibly revolutionary. I mean, it really dismantled centuries of criticism focused on the author or artist. This is exactly where we get the famous, maybe infamous, concept of the death of the author, which paradoxically, perhaps, gives birth to the infinite possibilities of your interpretation. It fundamentally liberates you from just being a passive consumer. It empowers you to be an active creator of meaning. You're not just a detective trying to figure out the author's one true intention. It changes the whole game.
It really does. Okay, let's start unpacking his ideas on images then.
Yeah.
Because images feel so immediate, don't they? So objective.
Yeah.
What does Barthes reveal about how photographs, specifically, actually communicate?
Well, Barthes starts with this paradox of photography. It seems like a message without a code, right? Just a pure copy of reality, proof that that has been. You see it, you assume it's just showing you what was there. But he argues that has its most powerful ideological tool. Because it looks so natural, so objective, it can subtly embed and normalize cultural assumptions. It makes constructed values feel completely natural, unquestionable. He shows how even the most innocent photo is highly constructed through framing, lighting, pose, all sorts of cultural codes we've learned to read without even realizing it. And he makes this crucial distinction, familiar if you've looked into semiotics. Denotation versus connotation.
Okay, break that down a bit. Denotation.
Denotation is just what's literally there, what anyone could objectively point to in the image.
Right. The basic facts of the photo.
Exactly. But connotation. That's the really interesting part. That's the whole web of cultural meanings, associations, feelings that we layer onto that literal image. It's not just what you see, but what it culturally signifies to you within your culture.
And he illustrates this so well with that example you mentioned earlier, the Panzani pasta ad. It really makes it click.
Yes. In his essay, Rhetoric of the Image, he meticulously breaks down this ad. He finds three messages working at once. First, there's the linguistic message. The words on the ad, like Panzani, these, he says, strategically anchor our interpretation, guiding us towards a specific meaning.
Like telling you how to read the picture.
Pretty much, yeah. Then second, there's the non-coded iconic message. That's the literal stuff you see, the pasta, tomatoes, onions, the string bag, the what is there. But third, and this is key, is the coded iconic message. This is where the cultural magic happens. The collection of fresh vegetables, the red and green colors hinting at the Italian flag, maybe the string bag, it all subtly evokes Italianicity.
Right, like homemade, authentic, fresh from the market.
Exactly, that whole vibe. And his analysis shows how these sophisticated cultural strategies make these constructed values feel totally natural, like they just belong to the pasta itself.
Then he pushes this idea of extra meaning, the surplus, even further with the third meaning, doesn't he?
That's right. Looking at stills from Sergei Eisenstein's films, he identifies this third meaning. It exists beyond the obvious information, you know, the story, and beyond the clear symbols. It's often kind of obtuse, very personal. He calls it a sensory excess.
Like what? Give me an example.
Maybe a detail, like a strange hairdo, or the texture of someone's skin in the light, or a gesture that just strikes you for some reason. It sort of disturbs you, operates beyond simple communication. It resists easy explanation. It's a kind of extra significance, a pure visual pleasure, maybe, that hints at endless ways to interpret, unique to your own encounter with the image.
Okay, switching gears now.
Yeah.
From static images to the much more fleeting art of music. What does Barthes is teach us about the human voice, how we experience song?
Yeah, in The Grain of the Voice, he introduces this really profound concept, the grain. And it's not about a singer's technical perfection, you know, their range or how expressive they are in the usual sense. Instead, it's about the materiality of the voice, the actual sound of the body producing the song.
The physicalness of it.
Exactly, that physical friction between language and music. It's a deeply subjective criterion, he argues, for a certain kind of aesthetic pleasure. A pleasure he famously called jouissance.
Jouissance. Okay, that sounds intense.
It is. It's a kind of intense, almost bodily pleasure you get from encountering a text or performance. It can be challenging, even unsettling. It goes beyond simple enjoyment to something deeper, maybe even disruptive. He distinguishes this physical quality, this body and the voice, the Geno song, he calls it, from the more conventional stuff like melody, rhythm, interpretation, the Fino song.
And he contrasts singers to make his point, right? Like Charles Panzera, who he felt had this grain.
Yes, versus someone like Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau, who was technically brilliant, perfect even, but Barthes found his voice lacked that grain.
So it's not about being good in the traditional sense. Could you maybe give a more contemporary example? Someone whose voice might have grain, or maybe lacks it despite being technically great.
Sure, absolutely. Think about maybe a blues singer or certain folk singers. Mm-hmm. Someone with a raw, slightly strained vocal quality, perhaps. A tremor, a distinctive rasp or timbre that feels intensely human and physical. That could be the grain Barthes is getting at. It's the sound of effort, maybe, the body kind of pushing against the sound.
I think I get that.
And conversely, you might think of maybe a pop singer whose voice is perfectly produced, auto-tuned, every breath managed. Barthes might argue that the very perfection, while impressive, erases that physical friction, that unique grain that can create a really profound, almost visceral connection for you.
That's a fascinating distinction. Okay, which brings us to maybe his most famous and probably most controversial idea, the death of the author.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds pretty radical to a lot of people, I imagine. What does it actually mean for us as readers?
Yeah, it's definitely his most debated concept. This essay fundamentally shifts literary theory. First, in another essay, From Work to Text, he makes this useful distinction between the work, like a physical book, something owned by an author, often seen as having one single intended meaning.
Like something you try to figure out.
Right. And the text, which he sees differently, as more of a methodological field, potentially infinite, plural, a tissue of quotations, he calls it, drawn from countless bits of culture. And crucially, it's something actively produced by you, the reader, in the act of reading.
Okay, so the text isn't the book itself, but the experience of reading it.
In a way, yes. It's the network of meanings being activated. Then, in The Death of the Author, he makes the bold declaration. Once a text is written, the author's intentions become irrelevant to its meaning. The meaning isn't fixed by the author, it's created anew each time you encounter the text. The really iconic line is, "The birth of the reader must be at the cost of the death of the author."
Wow.
He argues the unity of a text isn't found in its origin, the author's mind, but in its destination, the reader.
You. So, okay, if the author's intention is dead, as he puts it, what does that actually liberate us to do as readers? What new significance can we find? How does it change reading?
Well, it's this huge intellectual liberation. It basically transforms reading from this act of trying to discover what the author really meant.
Like finding the secret key.
Exactly. Into an act of creation itself. It means the text becomes this multidimensional space where all sorts of different writings, ideas, cultural codes blend and clash. And you, the reader, are the one bringing it to life in that moment, weaving together meanings from your own experiences, your history, your current context. It means your interpretation is valid. In fact, it's essential. The text doesn't fully exist without it.
That's a powerful idea. So, okay, we've gone through images, music, text. This deep dive has really revealed a lot about how meaning gets made. If you had to boil it down, what are the core messages you should take away from Barthes? Like a new toolkit for understanding things.
Okay, yeah, a toolkit. First, I'd say, really embrace the social construction of meaning. Understand that meaning isn't just natural, it's deeply shaped by social codes, by culture. Think about, say, social media. How does it teach you to interpret a selfie or a curated lifestyle post? It's not just a picture, it's loaded with complex codes about success, happiness, whatever.
Right, things we often don't even question.
Exactly. Second, recognize the active reader viewer. You are not just a passive sponge soaking things up. You are an active creator of meaning. Every time you engage with media, a book, a film, an ad, you're building something, weaving together different cultural threads.
Okay, active creator. Got it. What else?
Third, cultivate a critique of authority. Question anyone who claims to hold the one true meaning of a text, whether it's the author saying I meant this, or a critic, or some institution. Barthes is really about democratizing interpretation for you, shifting power away from supposed experts towards you, the participant.
Interesting. And fourth?
Fourth, appreciate the multiplicity of meaning. Texts are plural. They can support many different, even conflicting, valid interpretations. And this isn't a flaw, it's a feature. It offers you intellectual humility, knowing your reading isn't the only one, but also immense creative freedom. Meanings are abundant, not scarce.
That's a great set of tools, and this isn't just abstract theory, is it? Barthes gives us really practical ways to navigate our world,
yeah,
which is just saturated with media. How can you, listening now, apply these insights today in your actual life?
Oh, immense practical value. Absolutely. Start with critical media literacy. I mean, after this deep dive, you just can't look at an advertisement or a news photo or a social media post in quite the same way. You start asking, okay, what's the literal image here? Denotation. And what are the cultural ideas being subtly suggested? Connotation. How is the text, the caption, anchoring my interpretation towards one specific reading? What ideology, what set of assumptions about the world is being presented here as just natural or common sense?
So it empowers you then. Instead of just being swayed by the surface message, you become an active decoder, maybe less easily manipulated.
Exactly. It equips you to really dissect the messages constantly coming at you. It also leads to a deeper appreciation of art, film, and literature. Instead of just hunting for the artist's intent, you can focus on your own interaction with the work, finding those third meanings that resonate personally. That sensory excess, that physical pleasure, that jouissance maybe, it makes your engagement much richer, much more personal.
And beyond media, does it apply elsewhere?
Definitely. Think about everyday communication and relationships. Understanding that messages aren't just decoded based on literal words, but through complex cultural frameworks. That can make you a more empathetic and effective communicator. It helps you become aware of your own connotations, the cultural baggage you bring, and how others might be reading you based on their own cultural lens.
That makes sense. So if we zoom out to the bigger picture, you could say Barthes essentially gives you a kind of manual for critical thinking, helping you navigate political arguments, identify underlying assumptions, and just consciously engage with the fire hose of information you face daily.
That's a great way to put it. It helps you see the world itself as a kind of text, right? A complex network of signs just waiting to be deciphered. And crucially, it encourages you to challenge what's presented as obvious or natural.
This deep dive into Barthes' image, music, text. It really does reshape how you view almost every cultural interaction. For me, I think the most powerful takeaway is that sense of liberation you mentioned, the idea that you are an active participant, a co-creator of meaning. Is that sort of the ultimate gift Arthas offers?
I think it really is. What's so fascinating is that Barthas teaches you that meaning is abundant, not scarce. It's everywhere, and it's generative. Texts, images, sounds, they can support multiple interpretations without being diminished. In fact, their richness is enhanced by this plurality. It opens up infinite possibilities for your engagement, your creative response. It truly is an act of intellectual liberation that can shift your perspective on everything around you. It makes the world feel more dynamic, more interactive.
Which leaves us with a really important question, doesn't it?
Mm.
If you are truly the co-creator of meaning, what new, unexpected interpretations will you now bring to that tissue of quotations making up your own daily life and the cultural texts you encounter from this moment on? The power, it seems, to create meaning is now undeniably in your hands.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.